This is the Country Hour with Megan Hughes on ABC Radio Queensland.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your company on the Country Hour today. I'll take you to the northwest soon, where the sun is out after more rain over the weekend. But first, here's the latest on the weather. So a watch and act is current for the Flinders Shire. Residents in the region should monitor conditions, with continued flooding potentially impacting the Ernest Henry Bridge in Hughenden today. A watch and act warning for Garoo and surrounding areas in the Burdekin region has been downgraded to advice. If you are in the area, you should stay informed, especially in low-lying areas, with further heavy rainfall possible across the rest of the week. There are also watch and act warnings still current for the Winton region, with people urged to prepare now for further flooding possible over coming days. But if you are not local, you should avoid the area, as the community is isolated and not accessible by road. There are multiple flood warnings current. That includes major flood warnings for the Flinders River and the Western River, with major flooding easing at Winton, and it was sitting at 2.25 metres as of 9 a.m. this morning. There are also moderate flood warnings for the Norman and Georgina Rivers, while the Cloncurry River has been downgraded to a minor flood warning, with the river peaking below the moderate flood level last night. There are also minor and general flood warnings covering several other river systems, and a broad flood watch continues for rivers and creeks across the central west and northeast coast areas between Cairns and Proserpine. For all the latest weather details and warnings, you can visit the Bureau of Meteorology's website, the Queensland Disaster website at disaster.qld.gov.au, and your local council's disaster dashboard for the latest local warnings and updates. Keep listening to ABC Radio. We are your emergency broadcaster, and I'll have the latest information direct from the Bureau of Meteorology coming up later in the show. But to the northwest now, where the estimated number of missing or deceased livestock in northwest Queensland is approximately 16,530. The Department of Primary Industries released these figures this morning. In the statement, they also said total fencing damage is estimated at approximately 794 kilometres, while over 1,400 kilometres of private roads have been impacted. They're asking affected producers to complete the disaster impact survey, which is on the department's website, so you can report damages and losses on your property, as this information is going to help speed up the process to activate disaster relief. If producers need help with the disposal of animal carcasses, they can contact their local council. I'll keep you up to date on the latest information as well throughout this week. Now, as much-needed sun starts to make an appearance across sodden parts of northwest Queensland, concerns remain high for livestock stuck in flood waters. Prior to the weekend, the area around Richmond was faring okay, according to Mayor John Wharton, but isolated and heavy rainfall saw falls of up to 200 millimetres across the area. He spoke with Madeline McCosker earlier this morning about how the region is faring.
Well, we got smashed last night before last, and the rain has cleared this morning, and we've had a beautiful day coming ahead of us. We're full on with resupply and dropping hay today with helicopters, but we can only do a little bit over the last 3 or 4 days because the weather came in and out and it rained, and we don't like to fly them in the rain. So when we got a break, we were flat out. There's probably 8 or 10 helicopters out there at the airport. They'll be geared up and they'll be real busy today. We're not sure how it's going to go now. That last rain we got the night before last night was very, very heavy rain, and we think that it's probably killed a lot of cattle now. We're very wary about dropping hay out in the black soil where it's very soggy. We only want to drop hay on ridges and harder country. And when you've got those ridges and harder country, there's probably going to be a pick that those cattle can eat. One landowner, he's flown around his cattle and they've spread out because it's dried out enough. He missed out on a couple of storms, and he said his cattle are good. He's quite happy with his, but others, when they had that 200 mils, it just broke the camel's back, really. So, you know, they were okay before, and we were really good, honestly. Richmond and the Flinders Shire were really good up until that last night, and that sort of broke the camel's back, all right. Yeah. Killed a lot of cattle.
Do you have any – is it too early at this stage still to know figures in terms of cattle losses?
Yeah. I think after talking to some landholders, you know, one guy yesterday afternoon had flown around and he's sort of saying after, you know, if he had 2,000 in the paddock, there's probably 300 left.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. No, that's pretty bad. And there's big losses up in the Gulf again, you know. We revisited the old 19 again. A lot of cattle are gone. And mainly because those big storms, those big falls, you know, that 100 mil, 200 mil falls. You know, as I said the other day on an interview, that 50 mils or 60 mils out here is like 160 mils on the coast. The effect it has, like, talk to those fellas on the coast, and they said, oh, that's nothing. We're used to that. It just runs straight off into the ocean. But you get 60 mils out here after you've had a couple of 100 mils, and by God, it really does do a lot of damage. So can't get away, you know?
Yeah. So, and you did say that it is, well, it did clear sort of yesterday and a little bit overnight. There is a little bit more forecast for sort of sporadic rain across the northwest and east of Richmond. So I guess when you're already as sodden as you are in those parts, how concerned are people that this rain just seems to keep coming?
Oh, very concerned. It's a real bloody issue for people that are, you know, their stock are dying in front of their eyes and they can't do anything about it. It's a very traumatic experience. And, you know, we went through it in 19 and it was just unbelievable. You know, middle of the night, you're getting calls from people wanting helicopters to move their dead cattle from around their house. It's very disturbing. And you just have to work with it and you just have to continue to say that we've got support coming. And in 19, I will say, in 19, the Morrison government and the Palaszczuk government got together and did a great package and saved a lot of people's lives. I'll say that, Matty, right now. That money that came through, that grant, and we'll be talking to the federal government about that, bringing that back. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know what the process is now with that, but we need to be in a Cat D situation and get that grant, that money to keep these people alive, because they don't see a lot of future, some of them. You know, they're thinking, well, what am I going to do? And the restocking loan that the federal government did at that time, the $400,000, and the landowner had to match it with $400,000, that was a great project too. You know, and we were talking about that last night, how good that was to allow people to actually buy some cattle and start to restock. So we thought in 19 it was 100, you know, one in 100 years, and now we've had one 6 years later. Very isolated, I will say. Nowhere near as big as 19 in many areas. We've been flying around looking at things, and there's not the water around Richmond. North of Julia Creek, there was massive water. And in some places, that rain has made it higher than 19. But other places, it hasn't been in, you know, anywhere near 19. So, that's the weather, I guess. And but it's just these people need a hand up, you know, and that's all they've got to do is give them a hand up, and we'll be talking to the federal and state governments about this and over the next few days, because, you know, they can't really – no one can get around yet, and we'll see how we go. I mean, the cattle that they were feeding in the river on Saturday washed away on that Saturday night, you know, and all those sort of little instances, and we're hoping there's still cattle in places on islands and that sort of thing, and the river's a big concern. However, we'll just have to see what we come up with.
Yeah, and hoping for blue skies over the next little while to dry everything out so you can really get an idea of what you're working with.
Oh, my word, yeah. My word. You know, we're the railway flew the line yesterday on Sunday, Saturday and Sunday. QR flew their railway line to Mount Isa and back, and they intend to be, he said to me yesterday, they're going to swamp Richmond with workers next few days so they can get started on the line and then start working west. You know, that's going to be a big operation too, you know, getting that railway back up again. And I think in 19 it was 3 months before they got going. But the highway shouldn't be too bad. We think the highway, this river will hold the highway up. I believe Julia Creek to Cloncurry is open. It was open to trucks yesterday. Probably that water will be okay, but this water, the Flinders River, because it's so high here, it's backed up into Boundary Creek. So that'll probably be another 3 or 4 days before it gets down, I'd say. The river's stationary here. The Flinders is stationary, but at Marathon, it's starting to drop a little bit. So that's a good sign.
John Wharton, Mayor of the Richmond Shire in Northwest Queensland, speaking with Madeline McCosker. The Board of Australian Agricultural Company Limited, known as AACo, today confirmed heavy rain and flooding throughout northwestern Queensland has impacted 3 of their 27 properties. The announcement on the ASX today said the 3 golf properties impacted by the flooding are carrying around 55,000 head of cattle, which is significantly lower head count than the 2019 flood event in the same region. They said their immediate focus is on their people and the welfare of their animals, and the full effects of the flood are yet to be determined and are being managed in real time. And they are unable to do assessments of livestock and infrastructure yet, as there's still a possibility of further wet season impacts.
On your radio, online, and on the ABC Listen app, this is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
So staying in the northwest for a little while longer, because Winton Shire has carried out voluntary evacuations yesterday afternoon, preparing for a peak in the Western River over the next 24 hours. The Boulder Opal Motel is included in the area being evacuated, and a group of stranded travellers have been staying there. Winton Shire Mayor Cathy White spoke to Jeremy Jones.
We had an anxious few hours there last night, just wondering how far it was going to go up. But it did peak about 10 o'clock last night, and we've got a manual reading of 4.05 metres. So, yeah, she was quite high for us, but it's going back, receding. But we are expecting some more rises sometime today. But hopefully that water that has been here already will have enough time to start flowing down, and we won't get any worse. So I think we've seen the worst of it.
Is this something the community's used to, dealing with flooding like this?
Yes, it is. It's what we deal with. We've had our fair share over the last few years, but you know, like every flood is different. Everyone tries to compare one to the other, but everyone is unique. It's got its own pattern, and you just sort of just got to where the rain falls, and when it falls, and how full the river system was already. And so, yeah, you sort of like, you can measure it at the end, but how it happens and how fast it happens, everyone is totally unique.
And, of course, Winton is on the bucket list of so many travellers as well. Are there many travellers stuck in the region?
Yeah, no, we've got a few here. And, they're all been in pretty good spirits. So we're very lucky. We've got we opened up our brand new youth centre in April last year, and a component of that was to do with our recovery centre there for our disaster management. And it's just worked a treat. And we've had our staff down there every day manning that. And we've got some washing machines and dryers and a big industrial kitchen and pool table and ping pong and games and TVs. And it has worked a treat, that room. So, no, we've had a great place for our stranded travellers to have some good time out.
And voluntary evacuations have been carried out. Are there any more planned?
No, not at this stage. We just did that for a precaution, and we were very pleased we did yesterday. We evacuated the Boulder Opal Motel there just as a precaution, because we had to block the two driveways with sand to stop it going in, which was successful. And, the SES have been amazing in our town to come and help evacuate people there as well. So, no, we did that and did some door knocking along Ellerslie Street just for voluntary evacuation if they'd like to take us up on that offer. So, yeah, a few did and a few didn't. They were in the houses are a bit higher. So, yeah, no, very pleased with that.
And for the nearby stations, how are they going? Are they well supplied and isolated?
Yeah, so yesterday we had our first actual recovery meeting there, and so the phones were running hot there yesterday, just ringing around all the properties in the Shire for restocking for their actual supplies and making sure they got enough medical supplies and food there. So that'll be a coordinated food drops there coming up in the next few days or even starting today. And also then, of course, we are expecting some stock losses. So that all that process will also be unfolding in the next few days. But we stand ready with our hay, our helicopters. So, yeah, no, it all should be very good.
Winton Shire Mayor Cathy White speaking to Jeremy Jones. Now, with much of the Northwest Network made up of dirt roads, the Flinders Shire Council is reminding people to respect road closure signs after a rescue took place last night in between Hughenden and Mutterborough. Mayor Kate Peddle says it becomes challenging to maintain dirt roads when people are trying to access them in wet conditions.
Two cars have travelled past road closure signs on the Mutterborough end of our shire, and attempted to travel off a road that's been shut for a significant amount of time and has had quite a lot of rain on it, and it has been impassable, and they've obviously become stuck attempting to come up that road towards Hughenden.
And what kind of resources were needed to rescue those people?
Yeah, it was an interesting situation, and I would assume a lot of resources, but ultimately after trying to find some machines in the area to go down and assess and pick up these people, they are obviously deployed across where they're needed at the moment. So getting a chopper that fit the requirements of what land air and search needed weren't available. So what actually happened was the Life Flight chopper from Mount Isa had to travel out to Hughenden to collect these people.
And now, not just, you know, those resources, but what damage does this do to those dirt roads that council maintain in your area?
Yeah, look, it's really frustrating. We do everything we can, and I think all of our locals, we're very experienced. We have wet seasons all the time. We know the conditions of our roads after we've had rain. But for council, I mean, we're already resource poor. It's a significant amount of money to be able to restore these roads, and what we don't need is people adding further damage to them by trying to travel up them when they're closed.
Is this common in the Hughenden area?
Look, this event, it seems to be, but I think typically majority of the time people do the right thing. And like I said, it's not our locals, it's the people that are visiting our shire that, you know, might be desperate to get somewhere. Or I think another issue that we have is they'll follow detour routes on GPSs and they're not looking at the local advice, or they refuse to sort of believe the local advice. I'm not sure what the decision process is when they decide to go down these roads, but there's enough information out there, and I think the media has covered this event quite well for people to be very well aware that going down those roads is not only dangerous to them but comes at great cost to our councils.
The Hughenden-Mutterborough Road, so that is a dirt section?
Yeah, there's a little bit of bitumen at the beginning, but it's majority dirt. We have a lot of graziers down there. That's obviously the access road, and rightly so. They're quite protective of those roads because it is a challenge for us to continue to maintain the huge networks that we have, and most of them are dirt. So when we do have a season, they're already challenged enough. And like I said before, we don't need people. We don't need to be on that road cutting them up and making the bill more astronomical than it needs to be.
Now, do you have any advice for people who might be visiting the region and aren't aware of these roads or the conditions?
Yes, stay connected to the information and trust the information that's being put out. We put it out there for a reason. We're trying to protect, you know, obviously the people that are travelling through our shire. There's plenty of information. We all have disaster dashboards. If you go to the council website, if you go to any probably Facebook page in the area for any individual, there is that much information there. So really, to me, I mean, I get very frustrated because there is no excuse for anyone to be on those roads with the amount of information that's out there. And I mean, flick on the news, there's just really no excuse in this event. It's very widespread in terms of coverage of what the conditions are.
Flinders Shire Mayor Kate Peddle speaking to Brooke Tindall. I'll take you to the east coast now, where there have been some pretty big rainfall totals around the north and on the Atherton Tablelands. And some dairy farmers are welcoming these falls, like James Geraghty, who farms in Millamilla. He says he hasn't had nearly as much as nearby areas, but the cooler weather has been wonderful for the cows.
We've missed all the big drops. I think we're up to 119 for the month, remembering that we're only a few days into the month. This morning was our wettest. We had 80 mils overnight for the 24 hours.
And what sort of impact has that had on farm for you?
Paddocks are a bit soft. If we put the cows through a paddock for a couple of days, we're ending up with mud in and out of the paddock. But, yeah, look, it's been positive so far. The country's looking really good at the moment. It's soft, it's fresh. The rain has actually cooled the temperatures down a bit, which our cows appreciate. And you really do notice that when the sun comes out, the heat just rockets up and the cows just race for the shade. But, yeah, look, that's just this time of year. That happens every year. So,
what's the cows' behaviour been like?
Yeah, look, I mean, if the sun comes out, they race for the trees. But this little bit of cooler weather the last week or so, they're a lot happier. They're travelling well, so they're walking well because it's not so hot. But saying that, we had the sprinklers on them at 4:30 yesterday morning. Our cows stand under a roof while they're waiting to be milked. And we had the sprinklers on them to cool them down because it gets quite hot under the roof, or quite warm under the roof. And the steam is just lifting off the cows. And in winter, you see the steam come off the cows, that's normal, but at this time of year, that's terribly unusual. The body heat from the cows is you know, they have a lot of body heat.
Yeah, okay, and so when it cools down like this, that's why it steams up.
Yeah, and it's just better for the cows being that big. I mean, I think the optimum operating temperature for a Friesian cow is 12 degrees.
So how have they been milking lately?
From what I've spoken to farmers, most people's cows have risen in the last week, just given the cooler weather, less humid. The cows are out eating better. The grass is just that it's not growing quite as fast, but it's growing better. It's lining up quite well. Always understanding that, you know, the day it stops raining, the temperatures are just going to skyrocket.
Has this rain helped improve the fodder?
Yeah, the quality of the grass available to the cows is better. So we've shortened our rotations up, so we go back to the same paddock quicker than we have been, just to maintain the quality of the grass. I mean, quantity is one thing, quality is the overriding factor.
What's the highest total that you've heard from surrounding farms on the Atherton Tablelands?
Yeah, rain. The tanker driver rang up the other day and he had a tree down in front of him. So I went over and cut it off because there was no one else available to do it. So I went and cut the tree off the road. In a straight line from where I'm standing, he would have been maybe 5 kilometres away. I turned the windscreen wipers on the tractor twice that day because I was fertilising. Where he was, when I cut the tree off, the bloke across the road come down to say good day, and he reckons they had 2 to 3 inches in that storm. And we didn't get enough to measure. And the bloke a kilometre and a half up the road from him got 8 mils. That's just how storms are. If you're under it, you get it. And if you're not, you don't. And we weren't, and we didn't. Look, down on the coast, like South Johnston's probably maybe 30 k's from us in a straight line. They had 190 mils the other day. We had 20. And from what I've seen on weather reports, the storms, Mareeba and Athlone, have had a lot more than us. And out of this wet weather, the Daintree seems to be copping it a lot more than us this year. And they're most welcome to it. I just hope everyone has a happy, a safe and a productive new year. Just most industries need a good, soft year just to consolidate their businesses.
Millamilla Dairy Farmer James Geraghty speaking with Sophie Johnson. Weather's up next. Then afterwards, Queensland's agricultural industry remembers Sir Graham McKemley.
Before the sun rises, your local ABC team are starting their day getting ready to help you start yours. We're here to inform you as to what's happening with local news and events. ABC Breakfast, weekday mornings on ABC Local Radio.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's time to check in on the weather, and Phelim Hanafy joins me from the Bureau of Meteorology. Phelim, what's the latest on the rainfall in the north?
So we've seen a reprieve now in terms of the heavy rainfall risk for parts of the northwest and northern interior as well. And even for the northeast tropical coast today, the risk of those localised heavy falls that have been persistent over the last several days, that risk has somewhat eased as well today as well. Though couldn't rule out some isolated falls, localised heavy falls occurring in parts of the far north Queensland today, particularly areas north of Ingham, parts of the north tropical coast, and the northern interior there for areas north of Georgetown during today. But that risk now much lower than recent days as well. Over the last 24 hours, we saw some sizable totals, particularly along that northeast tropical coast and especially around the Townsville area and including Magnetic Island as well. In fact, Picnic Bay there, 249 mil in the 24 hours to 9 a.m. That was probably the top fall as well. And around Townsville itself, falls of 100 to 200 mil around Townsville, locally more a little bit just to the north of Townsville. In fact, one location picking up 245. And we also saw some, again, localised falls of up towards 80 or 90 mil in parts of the northern interior with some of that storm activity yesterday. But the risk now has eased, and for areas of the northwest and northern interior, it's all about what has fallen in terms of the effects on the river systems rather than what will fall. So we expect a reprieve for these areas in the coming days.
So I'll get back to you soon on the flooding, but just looking ahead to later in the week, it does look like this is going to ramp up again.
Yeah, indeed. The watch point later in the week is that we'll see another ramp up in potential monsoon activity, initially up over the peninsula, but then more extensive across far north Queensland and culminating in a tropical low forming off the far northeast coast as well. That tropical low has a low chance of developing from around Friday, but it's over the weekend that increases to a moderate chance of tropical cyclone development. That's 25 to 30% chance as we go into the weekend, particularly on Saturday. It does lessen again on Sunday. But the majority of models saw that tropical low, regardless of development, moving potentially westward and back towards or over the far north Queensland coast later in the week and into the weekend. Now, the watch point is that this is likely to bring another round of potentially heavy, even locally intense rainfall to these areas. And many of these areas already heavily impacted and significantly saturated from the recent rain event as well. And many of the river systems here, particularly along the northeast tropical coast, remain at flood as well. So though a brief reprieve for now and in the coming days or through the middle of this week, we're likely to see another ramp up in rainfall activity across far north Queensland later this week and particularly over the weekend. And also with that tropical low, regardless of development as well, it's likely to enhance winds along the northeast tropical coast. So not just the rain, but the potential for strong and gusty winds as well developing around that low, particularly on the southern flank of that low as it potentially moves towards parts of the far northeast tropical coast later in the week and by the weekend.
Now, coming back to the flooding, you mentioned that, there is, as you said, in coming days, not as much before it starts ramping up again. But are there any areas that can expect some flood water that's starting to now get through the systems?
No, indeed, there's still numerous flood warnings in place across much of northern Queensland at the moment. The most significant ones, particularly out over parts of the northwest and northern interior, major flooding ongoing across the Western River, major now flood above major level at Winton, and also major flooding on the Flinders River and around Richmond as well. Major flooding likely to persist on these river systems for a number of days yet, as well as that there's still a large volume of water across land up here, and some of that has yet to filter into the channel systems as well. So still potential for further rises despite the rainfall easing up here in the coming days as all that large volumes of water start to filter in further downstream into the river systems as well. And we've got moderate flooding around Normanton River as well, with potential for renewed rises here. And also moderate flooding remains ongoing across the Cloncurry River and also Georgina River as well. And still large volumes of water yet to move down those river systems as well.
Looking to the rest of the state now, what can southern and central Queensland expect?
Yeah, so southern Queensland, not completely insulated from the significant weather. We've got a lingering trough also in the far south of the state. That's bringing storms to parts of the central interior and southeast of the state as well, and a risk of severe storms in parts of the southern Darling Downs and inland southeast coastal district as well during the rest of today. Some of these have the potential to generate large hail, damaging winds and heavy rainfall. And we've seen some of this activity in the recent days as well through parts of the southeast as well. And this risk lingers through today and probably into tomorrow as well, though the focus probably more likely over northern New South Wales, but certainly increased potential for some storm activity around the southeast during the rest of today and tomorrow. We'll see reprieve, though, through the middle of the week, particularly by Wednesday. Conditions drying out across interior southern Queensland will become a little bit warmer as well, with just coastal showers lingering along parts of the southeast coast. So certainly a reprieve from the storm activity down here as well by the middle of this week.
And what about for areas like Capricornia and the Wide Bay Burnett?
Yeah, in terms of the Wide Bay Burnett, also a risk of some storm activity, particularly across more western areas today as well. But generally less storms expected here. And over the next few days, still coastal showers affecting parts of the Capricornia and the Wide Bay Burnett. But across more inland areas here, we should see mostly dry conditions through the middle of the week. Probably later in the week, though, most areas along the east coast will see a strengthening southeasterly trade, which is going to be fresh to strong and gusty, particularly along the tropical east coast as we go to the latter part of this week. And that's going to be linked to that tropical low development off the north tropical coast to the latter part of this week as well.
And looking in coastal waters, I see there's some strong wind warnings up north. Is there anything else happening?
There is indeed, yeah. The upper on Townsville waters at the moment and the Cairns waters, and that's driven by a southeasterly surge that's just pushing up there now as we speak as well. So we've got a strong wind warning current for fresh to strong southeasterlies in play here. They may ease a touch tomorrow, still remaining fresh, but it's through the middle and latter parts of the week we'll see a broad strengthening of that southeasterly trade right up along the tropical east coast, fresh to strong. And depending on the strength of that tropical low as well later in the week, there could be a risk of some damaging winds developing along the exposed east coast, particularly if those winds strengthen further. You get the squeeze between a ridge and that tropical low developing off the northeast tropical coast later in the week could create a broad strong wind risk for parts of the tropical east coast as well later in the week. So, yeah, freshening southeasterly winds for the second half of the week and strong at times, certainly by Friday and the weekend for many areas.
And how are temperatures going to be impacted by this weather?
Yeah, indeed. Temperatures have been significantly below average for a number of days now across parts of the northwest and northern interior and even the central interior the last couple of days. In fact, up to 12 degrees below average. Today, they'll still be below average, but we've seen good breaks in the cloud out here now, a reprieve in the rainfall and showers. So temperatures slowly warming up, if you want to say, in comparison to recent days, but still a couple of degrees below average for the time of year and likely to remain near or on the cooler side of average over the next few days. Across the southern half of the state, though, with less showers through the middle and latter part of the week, we'll see warmer conditions develop across inland southern Queensland later this week, but for everywhere else to the latter part of the week, generally near or a little bit below average temperatures expected to persist.
Caleb Hanafy, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology.
How come chips are all the same shape? What's inside a football? I'm Dr. Carl. Let's go behind the scenes again and have a world of fun finding out.
Dr. Carl's How Things Work. Back Tuesday, January 6 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Thank you for your company on the Country Hour today. Sir Graham McCamley has passed away at the age of 93. He was known as a modern-day pioneer and champion of the nation's beef industry, and the Central Queensland grazier lived an extraordinary life. President of Agforce Shane McCarthy says he's leaving behind a big legacy.
Sir Graham, they don't make them like that anymore. In the footsteps of giants we follow,
And he was one of those people. His influence on the beef industry, particularly Red Tartarus and Brahman, was incomparable. And also agri-politics and veg management laws. They just don't make them like him anymore, unfortunately. And the industry mourns his passing and passes on their condolences to his family.
He did some, you know, incredible work, not just in the Brahman space, but also setting up, you know, leadership and official, I guess, representation in the ag industry.
Yes, he was the inaugural president of the Cattlemen's Union, which, you know, in those days played a very strong, pivotal role in taking the beef industry forward. And those type of people are needed in industry. You know, he set the standard for other people to follow.
What do you think will be his biggest legacy?
Just his quiet leadership and that, you know, the amount of work that he did for industry in the beef industry, especially, and veg management, like I said before, the veg management laws. The quiet and strong leadership that he provided in those times. We would like to pass on our condolences to his family. These type of people are not easily replaced.
President of AgForce, Shane McCarthy. From founding the Cattlemen's Union to helping develop the Brahman breed through work with the CSIRO and Queensland University, and also playing a pivotal role in saving the life of Joe Biocchi Peterson's son, Sir Graham McCamley's influence stretched across agriculture, politics and rural Australia. Brett Coombs was family friends with Sir Graham, and he tells Jeremy Jones about his legacy.
I was probably lucky enough, and my father was who did the beef expos, but Dad had a close relationship with Graham from the 60s, early 60s, I guess, with the Brahman breed. And we also lived at Marlborough Station, which wasn't far from Tartarus, and then we moved to Waverley then in the 70s. And we had a good relationship with Graham and Shirley and Jackie and Jenny and Russell, the kids that, you know, we were, as kids, we did a lot of stuff together. And, yeah, it went on later in life. I was lucky enough to work at Tartarus on a few times doing AI programs and whatnot. And, you know, Graham was an innovator. There's no doubt about that. You know, what he did was just amazing.
How would you describe the legacy that he leaves behind?
Well, I guess, you know, the thing with Graham that always got me with him was, you know, he was always thinking, you know, like you could talk to Graham and, you know, he'd fly, I'd be AI and cows, he'd fly in and ask me how I was going, how many I'd done or whatever. And, you know, he'd look at him and he'd look straight past you, and you know he was thinking about what else he could be doing or whatever. So he was certainly an outside the box thinker, and you know, there's no doubt that the Briggalo development and you know, the use of pivots and irrigation and all that setup that he set up at Tartarus and Royals was his foresight, and you know, the use of choppers, you know, he was a, you know, blade ploughing. I mean, all those things, you know, obviously I'm not saying that Graham developed, but he certainly was an innovator in getting him in there and just getting stuff done. He was amazing like that, yeah.
What can you tell us about his contribution to the breed?
Well, you know, back in the 60s, Jeff and his brother, Graham and his brother Jeff, basically, Jeff had Lancefield and Graham had Tartarus, and they started the Tartarus Lancefield site, and they both had, you know, were certainly big stud breeders then, but they started their sale, and I think it was about 50 years, about 2 years ago. So, you know, that was back in the 70s, I guess, I'm working out the numbers. But unfortunately, the Tartarus aren't in that sale anymore. But, you know, there was probably 48 years of, you know, just the Tartarus Lancefield sale was a you know, it was a monumental event every year. You know, you'd go there, they were the ones that started the night sales, and there'd be glitter, and, you know, it was pretty amazing. And certainly Graham and Jeff, his brother, they certainly, you know, were innovators in all that. And they were the guys that, you know, they obviously had cattle in here from the 50s imports, but they were the ones that went over there in the late 70s and imported cattle with a lot of the other pioneers, Rob Innes and, you know, I don't need to name them all, but there was a lot of fellas that, well, there was a core group of probably 10 breeders that really brought a lot of cattle in the 70s and 80s. And, and Graham was certainly amongst them. And you know, they certainly, you know, showed cattle, and they had performance. They you know, they were big in the performance recording. They did a lot of steer fattening and carcass competitions. And yeah, he certainly was an innovator. And I guess the one thing I do remember about Graham is, you know, he was president of the Brahman Breeders back in the early 70s, and the Beef Depression started in 74. And I can tell you, I was only high, being primary school then, but I do remember, you know, that no sooner had the Beef Depression started, Graham McCamley wasn't going to put up with this low price for beef. I think he opened two butcher shops in Rocky, and, you know, he was always thinking outside the box, like I said, and, you know, that's where I got to tip my hat to him. And you know, he developed a great thing up Tartarus there. It was an amazing setup. I know they had a big field day there back probably 20 years ago now, but it was, you know, just to see the setup, the you know, and he certainly had some great staff, you know, the Catons and old you know, Frank Titmus, Frank and Pauline, they were there for a long time, and you know, there were some guys that really stuck by him, and you know, he ended up with Curtis Island, I think, and you know, he certainly spread his wings. He went up north to Richmond, and some of that irrigation up there he got going, and then he developed Royals, and you know, that was, you know, amazing, all the flood irrigation and the centre pivots and the water harvesting, and yeah, so it was a pretty amazing setup. And what he did in his lifetime was, you know, most of us would be flat fitting it into three lifetimes.
You mentioned the 70s there, and he was good friends with your dad. Does this make you reflect on that time and what it was like then?
Well, to be honest, I guess for us, for kids in the 70s, we were all at boarding school. My dad worked for Stanbrook, so we were sent away to boarding school. So we just went there to play footy and bury our head in the sand, I guess. But in thinking about it, it certainly was a tough time for beef producers. But I just remember that, you know, that Graham, I can remember him talking to Dad about it one time, and he, you know, like I said, he was a man that if he said he was going to do something, he usually did it, and that's what happened. He started his butcher shops, and then kept going with that sort of type of thing.
And when you reflect on him, what do you think about?
Sorry?
Well, when you reflect on Graham, what do you think about now?
Oh, look, I just tip my hat to Graham, because like I said, he was an innovator, and you know, there's certainly been, you know, over the years, you know, and this is what happens to people with an amazing mind, is that, you know, certainly some of the projects haven't all been successful, and you know, he's landed flat on his back on more than one occasion, and probably chucked a couple of choppers out of the sky, I think, and you know, but you know, you always got back up and get going again, and I guess that's the epitome of living in the bush. You know, we get floods, we get droughts, and you know, Graham just, he never gave up, and he's tough. But I guess for me, it was his innovative thought, and he just never stopped thinking about what he could do next.
And it was stories of saving the Queensland Premier's son at the time, and the helicopters too. There's a lot of incredible stories there. And even that despite his properties, at times he'd be living in a camper van just to look at his properties.
Yeah, that's right. Graham was quite happy to roll a swag out in the camp anyway. He didn't need to be in the best resort in the world. But he was, like I said, he was a bit of a doer, and he you know, he could spin that chop around. I've seen him on a few occasions. Probably not the most stress free stock handling you'd see today, but he'd get the job done. And that's sometimes you just, as much as we love to do all that stuff, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to get the job done.
Brett Coombs, friend of Sir Graham McCamley, speaking with Jeremy Jones.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Fox detection dogs, den fumigation, and a professional shooter are just some of the ways the Mary River Catchment Coordinating Committee is trying to increase the chances for the critically endangered Mary River turtle. It's nesting time for the turtle, best known for its ability to breathe through its bum underwater. For the first time, the MRCCC has trialled man-made structures for hatchlings to hide in. Shona Sengstock tells Jennifer Nichols they've also relocated nests to save them from flooding.
The flooding, land clearing, predation by foxes is his biggest threat. So with only just a few nesting banks in this reach, in the Gympie Reach, he's got limited opportunity to come up and nest. So when he does, his eggs are predated by foxes, but also foxes are predating the nesting females. But in particular, in the Gympie Reach, we have a lot of high traffic on the one nest bank that this guy comes and nests on. So we have people walking their dogs and compacting the nests.
What have you been doing to try to counter these issues?
We've got our Mary River Turtle Nest Protection Program, where we're recruiting volunteers to help us to look for turtle tracks. So when we can find a turtle track, we can locate a turtle nest, and then we have special enclosures where we can extract the nest, take it to the enclosure, allow it to incubate and those hatchlings to emerge, and then we return them back to the river.
So it's very similar to the work that's being done with the sea turtles.
Pretty much. If there's opportunity, we will protect in situ, so they will be covered with a special mesh and then they will emerge and disperse into the river themselves. Last year, we trialled an enclosure with a self-release mechanism on it, so that the turtles, in, say, a week out from hatching, we went and opened it up so that the turtles could self-release back into the river.
How did that go?
That went extremely well. So we got 100% of the clutches that were popped into that enclosure.
How many hatchlings have we had in the last year that you know of?
So in the Tyro Reach, we got 202 hatchlings. We had 18 nests and 9 of those were destroyed by flooding. So only out of 8 nests, we got 202 hatchlings. In Gympie here, we had 4 clutches, but they were all relocated and we got 52 hatchlings. Had we not done that with the flood that we got at critical nesting time, we would have lost everything. And then the Mary Valley, we got about 44, and again they suffered the same fate. Most of those nests were inundated by flood, really fast flowing minor floods which flooded the nests.
How have you been tackling the issue of foxes?
We've been deploying our fox dog detection team, detects foxes in the area and then uses the dog to detect the dens. Once the dens are detected, they're fumigated.
And you've also had contractors shooting some of the foxes?
Yep, so we've had an awesome contractor going out there spending multiple hours locating foxes within the nesting areas.
How many have you taken out, do you reckon?
So we've had 14 fox dens and 25 were shot on the spot.
People might think that sounds awfully cruel, but as a feral animal, they do so much damage to the environment, and it's a lot kinder than, say, 1080 bait being left out.
Most definitely. They're dispatched on the spot and without that pain. Foxes are in every ecosystem. They're found to even be scaling sky-rise buildings. Foxes are a really big problem.
Shona Senstock from the MRCCC. Nathaniel Larson has been coming up with some great ideas for the MRCCC on how to create habitat in the river. We've talked to you about your cod logs before, but now you're trying to do things to help protect turtles.
Yes, we've been trialling an innovative approach, habitat design. It's quite a simple bit of gear. It's a hardwood square prism lattice kind of thing. And the idea is
that it's a box with gaps.
It's a box with gaps. And the idea is that we have this simple prism and we stick sticks in it and it replicates naturally occurring structure, which is now absent since land clearing. Juvenile turtles, when they hatch and they run in stream, they're prone to being predated by a whole host of species native to the area as well as now invasive. And the idea with these habitat structures is that we're giving them a better chance of making their way from the nest banks to the riffle zones, which is where these juvenile turtles spend the majority of their time. We've put in around 30 and largely in the upper catchment of the Mary River, so on the edge of nesting banks, promoting habitat connectivity.
Nathaniel Larson from the Mary River Catchment Coordinating Committee.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
When was the last time you spoke to your best friend from primary school? Veronica McDonald and Wendy Windridge have kept in contact for almost 60 years, and now they're keeping a pact they made as teenagers to retire together back in their hometown. Back living the simple life in the outback, the pair are reflecting on a long-distance friendship that spans decades, as Brooke Tindall reports.
It was at St Francis Catholic Primary School in Hughenden in the 1960s that what would become a lifelong friendship between Veronica McDonald and Wendy Windridge blossomed.
Life was so simple. It just meant school, prayers, church, and playing in the afternoon after school until dark, and being at home, but very simple life.
Wendy says it was a case of opposites attract.
She was a really studious student, was always had things done, and all the teachers loved her. She was did everything right, and I was a naughty one. Never put in me homework, and always looked out the window thinking I should have been somewhere outside instead of in the classroom. When she was sort of really square, I was really wild, and we met in the middle.
Yeah, Wendy, I this rebellious young student in my class, and there's something I love about her, and I still love her.
The streets of Hughenden, a town of about 1,000 people in northwest Queensland, are a little quieter now, but Wendy says back in the day, the social scene was thriving.
We used to love riding the car, the bonnets of the cars down the main street. That was our excitement. We went to parties at the slaughter yards. Galah Creek and Bindio Beach were the places we went, and that consisted of our weekends. There was always a party and always a car to ride.
Both women worked as nurses at the Hughenden Hospital before getting married in their early 20s and moving away. Veronica had a long career in nursing all over the country, and Wendy worked in childcare and ran a small business in Bowen, all while raising 35 foster children. The two kept in touch over the phone and occasionally visited each other until Wendy's mother got sick and Veronica joined her in Hughenden to help care for her.
I was struggling with it, so my friend Veronica flew up from Brisbane, and she stayed with us until Mum passed, and we gave her her nursing care. That bond that forms from somebody doing that for you, it lasts forever.
Wendy said after her mother passed, the support for one another continued through long phone calls.
We used to have long phone calls. If one was feeling that they needed support because of something in their life was happening, then the first person we would ring would be each other. So we knew that love and support would always be there. So
now, after more than 40 years of living apart and with their children all grown up, they've returned to Hughenden by themselves to retire, honouring a pact they made as teenagers.
It was always my perpetual home, always. Each and every pilgrimage, every year, we came out and celebrated birthdays and that, always my eternal home.
And we did make a pact.
We did make a pact. You can talk about
it. No,
you
can do that. You can do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, we made a pact as 15-year-olds that we would always come back and live in the pensioners' units across the river. But twin's brother, Sean, he moved there first. And he beat us. So there was no way in the world we were going to join in there. So we bought our individual home.
I had forgotten about it, and Veronica reminded me. She said, well, we've fulfilled that pact. And I went, what? And then when she said that, I went, oh, my God, we did too. Yeah, so subconsciously we were working towards it, forgotten because we were so young and so much happens in between.
After 60 years of friendship, they say making time for one another is the key to staying connected.
It's about, you know, going about your own sort of life, but remembering those friends and to pick up that phone or to go visit, to make that effort. And that's what the friendship is built on, is making the time and doing the extra little things to ensure that friendship lasts.
Wendy Windridge ending that story from Brooke Tindall. That's all we have time for on the Country Hour today. Thank you so much for your company. My name is Megan Hughes. News is up next. It's 1 o'clock.